Longtime listeners know that I've been interested in beauty and skincare for as long as I can remember. And so I want to tell you about a new product line that I've discovered that I think you will like, called Exponent Beauty. Listeners of the show will receive 20% off their purchase. More details on that in a minute. Exponent Beauty is a skincare brand with a line of activated anti-aging serums that are clinically proven to reduce fine lines and wrinkles. The founder is a beauty industry expert who went on a 3-year research and development journey to finally crack the code on keeping anti-aging ingredients at peak potency. Today's skincare products contain pre-mixed ingredients that degrade rapidly as soon as you open the bottle. The beauty of Exponent Beauty is their innovative form factor. The powders are activated with the serum in their patented, refillable, precision-dosed dispenser. No more expired or underutilized products with Exponent Beauty, just high-quality skincare with ingredients that work. Go to exponentbeauty.com and use code TELL20 for 20% off a purchase of $100 or more. That's Exponent, E-X-P-O-N-E-N-T, Beauty, BEAUTY.com and use code TELL20, TELL, then the numbers 2 and 0, for 20% off your purchase of $100 or more. Things to tell you. And you have 10 things to tell. This show is about connection with each other and with ourselves. And the hope is that the things we talk about here will be fuel for better conversations and a personal awareness. This is an interactive podcast. Each episode has a prompt and a topic that I want you to take to your journal, text to your best friend, or answer on social media using the hashtag 10 things to tell you. This is a show about digging deeper and sharing our stuff. I'll go first. A few years ago, I spent hours, and I mean hours and hours, over a period of about a week, deep diving everything about paper planners. Because I am still in 2021 a paper planner gal. I do use digital apps and digital calendars too. I'm not a purist either way, but I heavily rely upon and vastly prefer using a paper planner to keep my head straight. So after I spent these hours researching the modern paper planner, I wrote up a blog post about what I found, what was important to me in a planner, and I will tell you right now that that blog post, and also whatever else I shared on social media, kind of along the same lines, that is one of the things I still get asked about in DMs all the time. People want me to remind them which planner I love, and of course the answer is just not that simple, because it's not really about the perfect planner, right? It's really about how we think about our time, how we even think about our planning. Our brains can prefer a weekly spread or a vertical layout or whatever, but that doesn't really get to the root of what we are trying to do when we talk about planners and planning, which is to wrangle our lives into something manageable, right? That is what we're doing. Trying to have an organized brain because we think that will bring us more peace or let us feel more in control. And in some ways, it does give us those things. My conversation today with Sarah Hart Unger is not only about paper planners, which she's sort of an expert in, and we do talk about that at the end of the episode, but really what we're talking about here is 10 ways to plan, to think about planning. It's a lot about mindset and time, and this is the exact right moment to put this episode out because the holidays are upon us, which means the end of the calendar year is upon us, and so we're thinking about what we want out of 2022 and what tools are going to serve us in pursuit of our goals and our work-life balance and all of those things that the end of one year and the beginning of another year brings up. Sarah Hart Unger is kind of an expert in this area. She has a podcast called Best Laid Plans, which is all about planning and planning tools and philosophies and, yes, notebooks and planners. She also has a podcast with time expert Laura Vanderkam. Their podcast together is called Best of Both Worlds, which focuses on time management and productivity and also family and career stuff in there too. But not only is my guest, Sarah Hart Unger, a podcaster and a regular blogger, she's also a doctor. She's a pediatric endocrinologist, and she lives with her husband and three kids in Florida. So you can see with all that going on, it makes sense that she is really into serious planning. You can find out more about Sarah on her website, The Shoebox, shoe spelled S-H-U. Those are her initials. And of course, I will link to everything we talk about today in the show notes at 10thingstotellyou.com/podcast. I hope this conversation is fun and inspiring to listen to as we enter this last big season of the year. Here's my conversation with Sarah Hart Unger. Sarah, welcome to 10 Things to Tell You.
I am so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
I'm so excited that you're here. One, because I love to talk about planners and time management and all of these things. It's like one of my topics that I secretly very much enjoy. But also, I've never talked about this with an expert like on the show. I have shared my own favorite planners and I've shared the way I think about it. But it's like much better to have someone else come here and tell us how to think about it. So I'm super excited. Will you just tell the listeners a little bit about you?
Yes. So it's so funny you called me an expert, because to me, this still feels like a hobby, but I guess I am cultivating a little bit of a, I don't know, connoisseurship around planning. But yes, my name is Sarah Hart Unger. I am actually a physician as my like real day job, but my really fun hobby slash, I guess, side gig is that I have a blog that I've had forever, and I have some podcasts, and I'm really, really into planning. So kind of a central part of my content has often been like, how do you organize your busy life to kind of live most intentionally and make sure that you're planning in the things that you love. So that's kind of how I got into it. And Laura, the funny thing is, like, I noticed when you talked about planners on your show, and I was always really interested because you had some strong opinions and things to say. So that's partly why I approached you, because I'm like, she gets it. Like, she may have different thoughts and feelings about how she likes to do things, but I've definitely noticed that come onto your topics sometimes.
Oh my God. Thank you for saying that. I do have strong opinions about planners because I care a lot about my own planner. I don't have strong opinions for how other people think about their planner, which sometimes my opinions do veer into how other people should think about things. I'll just be honest. I'm very bossy about that, but not in planners. Like, I don't care how other people's brain works and how, you know what I mean? Because people see things visually on the page differently. Some people feel very passionate about digital planners versus paper planners, like all of that. But for me, I do care a ton about my planner. And so I've had the same one for the last few years. I'm on my third of this one, which we can talk about in a second. But before I made that decision, I did like a serious deep dive and spent kind of a lot of money, several hundred dollars, trying out some of these other popular planners to see if they were for me. When I finally landed on the one, like a lot of times once I make a decision, like I live with that decision for a while, but I did care a lot about it when it was in the decision making time. So thank you for noticing. No, but wait, because you're a doctor, which is mind blowing to me, because I think it's so amazing when people who have like real jobs, I'm not diminishing my job, but like real jobs. And then they also podcast. So you're a doctor and you're a podcaster. Tell me about your podcast.
Yes. So, well, it all started with my blog, which I have been writing online since 2004, which is an obscene amount of time to be doing this. I'm like 17 and a half years in. So I was like a med student when I started.
Okay, hold on. This is amazing, because I obviously also started as a blogger, but I left it behind, but not because I didn't still love it. I do still enjoy blogging. It was more just like, something has to go. It's like a time management thing. But I noticed, do you blog daily?
I didn't always blog daily. I don't think I did daily through like residency. And certainly when I met babies were like little, there was not daily blogging going on. I look back to some months and I'm like, wow, I blogged twice in like May of 2012, which makes sense because my like now 9-year-old was like an infant. But right now I do blog daily. My posts are quick and I do a lot of things kind of fast and imperfectly. So that, if that's like my one secret, not my patient care. I mean, you can ask my patients if any of them are listening. I don't think I do that fast and imperfectly, but I do think that some of my like creative endeavors, I just like don't edit myself a lot. I mean, I'm careful in terms of obviously I would never like disrespect a patient's privacy or like reveal work secrets. So I'm curated, but in terms of like the quality of my writing, like it's kind of from the heart and it's pretty raw. So it doesn't take as much time as one might imagine. But yes, I blogged long before I podcasted. And in 2017, I was listening to a lot of podcasts and enjoying them and just thought like, this would be kind of fun. And I put that thought out there on my blog. And some of your listeners may know Laura Vanderkam's work. She's a time management expert. She's written many books. I think she's gotten at least one mention on your show before. And we had been like commenting on each other's blogs because that's kind of what happens when you blog for long enough. And she wrote me an email and was like, do you want to do a podcast together about working motherhood and like making those worlds fit together? And I was like, yes. So we started that in 2017 and it's like 250 some episodes strong. So that's been really fun. And then during the pandemic, as one does, I was restless and I was doing a lot of telehealth and work from home and things were just weird. And so I also found myself switching planners like every 5 minutes because 2020. So I was like, why not also start a planning podcast? And by then I knew a little bit more about podcasting. We already had a team that was helping us with like editing and stuff. So I knew how to do it. And my episodes are short. So once again, even though I know it sounds like it's a lot of time, learning about planners and stuff is something that I love. Like that is just pure for fun for me. And so I'll just like take little notes and then every week I share something like a new planner review or like a concept I've been thinking about. And my episodes are about 20 to 30 minutes. And yeah, they've been coming out weekly for the last year or so.
I love this because I love time management stuff and planners go hand in hand with that. I've read Laura Vanderkam's books, but it feels like a lot of time when I was doing my deep dive on planners and stuff, a lot of the people who share about it, and maybe you're in this world more than I am, but a lot of the things that I was coming across, that person is selling something. So they're passionate about their planner that they have, which is great. I mean, yay, yay, planner creators. But like, it was really hard for me to get almost objective reviews or sort of see like someone who was just like a planner hobbyist, like you're saying. And so
Exactly.
that's why I want listeners, like, I feel like listeners will really benefit from this because we're not like selling this new planner that you created. Like, you're just talking about, your own
Correct.
research and thoughts and like quality and all of that. So you brought today 10 things to share. I love it when people understand the assignment.
Well, I am your upholder. I will do the assignment. I'll turn it in on time. And I love this prompt. You know what I love about it? I love that it's not the top 10 things, like the 10 best things. It's just 10 things. And that made it so much easier to write than if I felt I had to come up with like the 10 overarching truths about planning. So thank you for that.
Okay, I love that. I'm glad that you said that because I do like a lot of my prompts. If I have 10 questions, 10 prompts about something, or even if it's just one, I do know that a lot of people, like moms, businesswomen, people who are listening to us, they have perfectionist tendencies. And so they can't even answer a 10 things prompt or even like a general journal prompt. They feel like it has to be like perfect. They have to give like the definitive answer to this prompt. And I'm like, no, like it doesn't, this isn't going to be like on your headstone. Like, this is just like 10 things. Like, we're just going to do 10 things to tell one another on a certain topic. And that's it. You can always revise later. You can always add something. It can be more than 10. So thank you for saying that. Let's take like all the energy out of like, these are the 10 things. But I do want to hear the 10 things that you have because I browsed through them before we recorded and I'm super excited to talk about
Yay!
them. So let's begin.
All right, we will dive in. Thing number one, in no hierarchical order here, planning rituals matter. So It's one thing to talk about planning and to like buy all the fancy things, but you have to actually think about where that fits into your life and when you're going to do it, or else it's not really going to serve you very well. So the first thing you want to think about is like, when do you want to plan? Like, when would that actually work for you? I'm going to share my personal rituals quickly, but that's not like a right answer. This is just an example. My planning rituals are that I plan each morning pretty early, like after I've woken up and read a little bit, but before my workout. So we're talking like in the late fives somewhere. That's kind of when I plan out my day. I try to plan out my week for work on Fridays and my like home week, which is the same week, but like the different aspects on Sundays. And those are rituals. Like if I did not do those things, then it would quickly get a little bit out of hand. So think about what you'd like your planning rituals to be because they are going to matter.
Okay, so I'm going to share my ritual too, because it really is like important part when you're juggling a lot of things. We all are. I sit down with my planner, my paper planner, which I'm not trying to be coy about it. I use the Plum paper planner. I'll put more on social media, y'all, so you can kind of see what I use. But I've been using the Plum paper planner for the last 3 years, even though it was empty in 2020, but that's fine. So I sit down on Sunday, late mornings, usually. We have our lazy Sunday family mornings, and then kind of like 11 a.m., 11:30, I sit down every week with my paper planner. And then I double up. So I have digital, I keep most of my work stuff like in Google Calendar on my phone. Well, I put a lot of stuff on my phone in that calendar when I'm on the go. But then on Sundays, I sit down and I like write out all of those appointments and kind of to-dos. So I do a weekly thing that's mostly actually events. So appointments, my kids' games, therapy, whatever I have. Then what I have started doing, I just talked about this on a recent episode, actually, on my episode about three things I'm doing to find balance. I have started making my to-do lists for the next day. I've started doing them the night before. Now, this seems like a little change, but it has been really good for me because I have just found that I have a better handle at the end of my workday. I have a better handle of what needs to happen the next day. Whereas if I sat down in the morning, every morning I'm like fresh faced and I'm optimistic and I can do all these things, you know what I mean? And sometimes I don't prioritize the right things and like whatever, and it ends up being a juggle. At the end of the day, like before I kick into mom time, dinner time, I know exactly what I need to prioritize tomorrow. Like I just have in a better mind space about it. I'm not optimistic. I'm like realistic more at 5 p.m. And so I started doing that part, but that's mostly work at night or like in the evening instead of in the morning. And I can't believe what like a tiny change can make such a big difference.
That is so interesting. So just that little tweak in your ritual turned out to like pay dividends. And this is also an illustration where everybody's different because I'm like so tired at 5 p.m. that I think my three things would be like take a nap, like I don't know, watch Netflix, paint my nails. I have no energy left. So that's like different strokes for different people. But that's beautiful. I'm so glad that is working for you as a better ritual. And I do get the temptation of like when you're fresh and energetic that you want to put way too many things on the list.
Yeah, totally. It can be difficult to find shoes that are stylish, affordable, and that you can walk long distances in without any pain or blisters. This might be one of life's greatest challenges, right? But that is why I am so excited about one of my newest sponsors, Born Shoes. I've been a fan of Born Shoes for years. I've had multiple pair of Born sandals. I love them. Born shoes are made with the best top quality leather with functional stitching and flexibility. They are lightweight. They're also supportive. They're great for all casual occasions. They are extremely comfortable and they are especially good for travel. Last summer, I walked all over London in my Born sandals. I was wearing the Iwa style. Love them. They coordinated with every outfit I packed. They never gave me any feet trouble, no blisters. I cannot wait to try out the Ithaca style that the brand has generously gifted me as well. Born Shoes offer sandals, flats, boots, and heels in several styles and color choices. You can take comfort in Born Shoes because every season they make high-quality shoes that feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus free ground shipping on all full-price shoes when you use my promo code TELL. That's Born, B-O-R-N, Shoes, S-H-O-E-S.com and use promo code TELL. T-E-L-L, for 15% off and free shipping, available exclusively to our listeners for a limited time. I have been lamenting the dinner time rush for years now, but with the help of Factor, it's one less thing to worry about every night. I am partnering with Factor this year, and I would love to tell you about it. Factor's ready-to-eat meals are healthy, delicious, and quick to serve. There are 35 weekly options to choose from, with options like vegetarian, protein plus, and keto. There are also over 60 snack, breakfast, and drink add-on choices to round out your menu. All of Factor's meals are pre-prepared, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved. What I love the most about Factor's restaurant-quality food is how fast your meal is ready. All you have to do is pop your meal in the microwave for 2 minutes, heat, and then eat. Heat. And then eat. That's it. Okay, actually, maybe my favorite thing about Factor is that these meals come right to your door. You can also pause or reschedule your delivery at any time. There is no prep, no cooking, and no cleanup. It is a win-win all around. Head to factormeals.com/tell50 and use code TELL50 to get 50% off. That's code TELL50, T-E-L-L, then the numbers 50, at Factor, F-A-C-T-O-R, meals, meals.com/tell50 to get 50% off. That you don't know where to start. I am a big proponent of therapy. That is why I am so glad to partner with BetterHelp. BetterHelp is an online counseling service that assesses your needs and matches you with a therapist in under 48 hours. They're licensed professional counselors. This is not a crisis line or a self-help program. Communication is all done securely and remotely, fully online. This is beneficial if you live in an area that doesn't have as many options for in-person sessions. You can log into your account and send a message to your therapist at any time, and you can also expect timely and thoughtful replies. Plus, you can even schedule weekly phone or video calls. You can also switch counselors if your needs aren't being met with your first match. Financial aid is available as well. 10 Things to Tell You listeners can get 10% off their first month by going to betterhelp.com/you. That's betterhelp, H-E-L-P.com/you, Y-O-U, for 10% off your first month. Okay, number two.
Okay, I'm going to introduce a concept here, but it was think about your time horizons and consider nested goals. I'm going to get into what time horizons that I really love in a second, but what I mean by nested goals are you want to think about how like your daily goals generally come from your weekly goals, and your weekly goals generally come from either monthly or quarterly or both. Then your quarterly goals are going to come from your yearly goals, and maybe your yearly goals come from some big overarching life plan or five-year plan. I'm not saying that like you can create next week's goals by solely just looking at your monthly goals, because that would be unrealistic, because there's going to be things in your calendar, there are going to be new opportunities that come up. But usually at each beginning of each of those horizons, whether it's a new month, a new week, a new quarter, you want to think about that segment's goals as a combination of what did you want to do? Like, what did you set out to do? So like the prior level, plus what's going on right now, how do you feel, what's coming up? And if you're intentional about combining those two things, you will find that things that are important to you, but not urgent, are less likely to just continually fall through the cracks. And you'll have a sense of peace that you're not like forgetting about things that were important to you. So I highly recommend trying this system. It does mean that you're committing to thinking about planning at all these like start of your new month, start of your new week, start of your new quarter. But many of us are going to plan that often anyway. It's just less, more haphazard. And by this way, you can kind of get ahead of things a little bit more. So I love this concept of nested goals, which I guess I named, and I'm sure someone else came up with it, but I named it nested goals.
That's a great name. And it is a way to prioritize, but without, like, I love what you said about like all the things that never kind of get done, but they just sort of like remain on your list. If you have them in a certain nest, if you have them in kind of a bucket of why you want to do that thing in the first place, or why that thing needs to be released because it doesn't fit anywhere and it's never going to get done. You're just like stressed out about it all the time. Then, the, you know, that it's just like a way to think about it, which I really like. I am not great at nested goals. I mean, I guess I should say I'm not great at big picture goals, maybe. Like I am much better at meeting daily deadlines or short-term deadlines. Like I put out a weekly show, that kind of thing. I feel like I get overwhelmed with like a year. This is what I want to do this year. Like, I'm just like, oh no, even though I have things, like I have big things that I do want to do, like home improvement things or writing a book, like things that I do want to do, but it's just easier for me to do the thing that's in front of me, which is like, oh, I want to clean out my closet, which goes to like home stuff and goes to things that you want or whatever. But like, I can do that in one weekend or whatever. So I'm going to do that. Like, I guess what I like is the instant gratification, like goals that I can meet all the time versus like the big ones. I just, I'm like, I can't do that. I'm not going to do that.
But you wrote a book and you grew a podcast. So I don't know. I think you're meeting some pretty big goals, maybe without consciously recognizing that you're doing them in pieces.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I do wonder if, because now we're sort of talking about like the way you're talking about nested goals, we're sort of talking about like how you think about things. And I have friends actually who are very overwhelmed by daily goals. They would be very overwhelmed by putting out a weekly show, but they do big picture things. Like they build a house or they do these things that take the whole year or whatever. That's like this big yearly thing. So it is, a lot of this is about like kind of maybe personality type or the way you think about it, your perspective of how you think about it. But as, you know, when we're talking about this, like this matters actually. If you can identify, oh, I'm overwhelmed by planning this certain way, I need to think about it a different way, that will be helpful to you versus like just being like, I can't do this. I'm not a planner. And then just like becoming an identity person of like, I'm not a planner. And then like, that's it.
Yes. And that's why I even phrase it like, think about your time horizons and consider, like, this is one way to think about it. Maybe you kind of are like, well, I don't want to make lists, but I still do like the idea of reflecting on the big picture every quarter or every month or something like that. So totally agree. This is customizable. Take what you will.
Wait, did we talk about time horizons?
Well, that's to me what a time horizon is. There's like the 5-year time horizon and there's the year time horizon. I think that came actually from David Allen, who like had the whole getting things done system, which was very popular like late 90s, mid aughts. He's still out there, but certainly some other productivity gurus have taken over a little bit, but I believe I got the concept of different time horizons from him. And that's just a different way to think about big picture planning, from the very small daily, what am I doing right now kind of moment, to very big picture, what do I want to do with my life?
You know what I still use from David Allen, getting things done? Y'all, I read this book years ago. I think it is still out there, and maybe he's updated it because it was very like pre-digital world. It was like pre-internet world, kind of the original version. But anyway, I'll tell you one thing about his system that I do still use a version of is writing your to-dos on a post-it note. Now he has it where you write every to-do and like you stack them like in your kind of inbox or whatever on your desk. And then you just go through them one at a time. Like, you know, you just get things done basically. It's the name of his system. But instead of like organizing your to-dos and making it look pretty and blah, 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 you just like write on a post-it, you put on thing, you just work your way through the post-its. The first time I read that, I was like, well, that's a little, is that, that's like Neanderthal planning. What is that? But I still do that actually when I'm overwhelmed, when I have a lot of to-dos and I'm struggling to prioritize or I need to like see it all. I still, to this moment, I'm actually looking at them right now. I write each thing I need to do on a post-it and I stick it on my computer, or if it's for my family, because I make my family do this, I put it on the fridge. And when you're done with that to-do, you get this very satisfying moment of ripping that post-it off and being done with it. And it is infinitely more satisfying than like crossing it out on your to-do list or checking it off or whatever. So when you're overwhelmed and you really need that, it's coming back to instant gratification for me. You really need that, like, I did it kind of moment, even if it's juvenile. I use those post-its and I got that from David Allen.
I totally love that. It also reminds me of like the programmers are super into having tasks boards, or they're called like Kanban boards, like a Japanese word for like flowing through tasks. And yeah, they'll move it from column to column, but in your task board, it's just like on the board and done. But it definitely brings a physicality to those to-dos.
Is that how you pronounce that, Kanban?
It might be Kanban. I mean, I think I don't know.
I don't know either, but I use that method too for projects, not for to-dos like I just described, but for project-based things that like I, like, let's say for that, I don't do this for the episodes, but this is an easy example, like recording is one, editing is one, social media is one, whatever, all the steps of booking a podcasting recording. I use those boards, but I use them in Trello. Do you use Trello?
I don't personally use Trello, but I totally see the value in Trello. And actually for my podcasting, we use a task management software that's similar to Trello. But yes, exactly. I mean, that's one, that's not my personal style, but that is certainly one way to, you know, organize what all of your items. And I think the step that you're mentioning where you just like write everything down, David Allen calls that like capture. And that can be so freeing because like just knowing that you kind of figured out everything that is on your plate and know that it's all accounted for and going to be figured out in some fashion can be just very freeing.
Okay. We took a little bit of a tangent. It was my fault. I will forever take a tangent on this show. Okay. But let's get back on track. Okay. Number three.
All right. So I want to introduce a concept that I came up with that resonates with many who have school-aged children in particular. So you know how normally the year is divided into quarters and it's like, you know, fiscal calendar, maybe in a business setting, you'll see January through March, April through June, July through September, and October through December. See, it's so unnatural, I can't even think of what they are. I have kids, and those cutoffs seemed very artificial to me, particularly like July. I live in South Florida, so by July, summer is half over already because our school ends so early. And so to me, I was like, this can't be the start of anything. What if I created my own demarcations? And so I decided that the cut points that made the most sense to me are January 1st, because I like that arbitrary beginning, spring break, which for us is usually sometime in April, but it could vary based on the school, end of the school year, whenever that is in your area, beginning of the school year, so that gives summer its own special little segment, and then beginning of kind of the holiday season, so I designated that as November 1st, kind of the time when the red cups come out and everyone starts playing holiday music and we all start thinking about the next year and reflecting and feeling cozy. So that makes five. So I named them quintiles instead of quarters. And that is how I set up my goals because it feels so much more natural to be thinking about things I'd like to do during a summer, just kind of like you see those summer bucket lists or summer fun lists, than to be thinking about some random 3-month period that kind of encompasses different parts of the year. So yes, that's quintiles.
But where do you do this? I mean, I know that you're thinking about it like this, like, here's what I want to do between the beginning of the year and spring break. Like I hear theoretically what you're saying, but do you put it down somewhere?
Yes, there is a tangible manifestation of that. So as I was talking about all these goals and lists, I do actually, these for me typically go in my Apple Notes, so I don't do everything on paper. But for each quintile, I think about what do I want to do? And I usually divide them up. I don't know if I got this habit from Laura Vanderkam or we've just rubbed off on each other, but I think we both do something like self, work, family, and like blog/pod, because for me, that's like separate category. So I will, I mean, I could find my list right now and like, you know, I'm going to try to do this, because a month, I don't know, I don't want to go straight from a year to a month. That feels like too much. And I just do feel like there are certain things you want to get done during summer. You might have vacations in mind that you want to put on your list or things to do with family or like very summer specific home projects or things like that. And so, yes, I do make a tangible list and I just like thinking about these segments of the year as cut points because it also helps to introduce new fresh starts, which I think can always be helpful and just kind of helps me appreciate the flavor of whatever that season is, whether that's the renewal of the fresh new year or the back to school season or the more relaxed vibe of summer or like the winter reflection time.
So wait, let me tie this back to number one again for a second. Do you have a ritual around when you sit down at the end or beginning of a quintile and like evaluate?
I would love to say that like I can devote an entire day to just like scheming about my quintile, but like, no, life gets in the way. We got too much stuff going on, but as we're approaching it, that's when I probably will sit down for an evening while my kids are watching TV and just really think about, like, okay, new quintile is coming up. Like, what do we want to do this summer? And I will put together my list. So it's not as formalized, but I guess, yes, in a way. It just maybe isn't as precious as you made it sound. I mean, I would love, and I try to do that once at the year end to actually take up, you know, some solid chunk of time and like as a gift to myself and really think about it. But in reality, I'm not always able to take a long block each quintile, but I do take some time.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then this is also kind of a good time for me to remind everyone, because I will slip in a mindfulness moment anytime I can. I'm always preaching to myself about mindfulness, but I do this with my family, not about the time, like we're sort of talking about planning and time management, that kind of thing, but I do include them in like, what do we want out of this summer? Like, what do we want when we get to the end of the summer? What do we want to have done? Like, there's certain things. Do you want to do a few days at the beach this year? Do you want to do a zoo trip? Do you, whatever, you know, like, what do you guys want out of this summer? Yeah. And so we do that as a family, but because we have those conversations, like you're describing, it does sort of make me then, I'm the one that translates into time management of like, okay, well, when are we going to do a weekend away, or when are we going to, you know, do that kind of thing. So it does sort of matter, but it's a mindfulness approach too. If you're looking at a quintile, a season, a break, whatever it is, to really like go into that thinking, if it's not goals so much, but more just like, what do we want out of this time? What do we yes. want to end this time feeling like we have done, or that we got the quality time in that we wanted or whatever? Because otherwise it's just talk. If you're like, oh, we just want to spend time together this spring break. Okay, well, what does that mean? You know what I mean? Like, does that mean we go away together as a family? Does it mean we have family night? Does it mean we have movie night three times? What does it mean? Like, it has to translate into something, or you're going to get to the end of the thing and be like, why we didn't accomplish what we wanted. And how did we not?
Yes.
You know,
and I actually think this is like a perfect segue to my next one, because when I say goals, I think sometimes people like shudder and think like, oh, boring stuff, like work. Okay. But if you make sure that your list of things encompasses all areas of life, and we're not just talking about work here, my number four is make lists of things you actually want to do, not just things you need to do. Take time to plan in fun and not just duties. And that's why I think, yeah, part of your seasonal list, I love that you could do like a little reflection session with your family, like talking about some of the fun things you would envision wanting to do together. Or I like that, how you want to feel at the end of the summer, because things that could be included on your goals list could be just completely like, we want to lie on the beach and all read together. We want to go out for ice cream 10 times and try 10 different places. Like, goals does not have to mean some like medicine that you're swallowing. Goals should be things that you want to do in life. Yes, there may be work projects that you want to do or are drawn to do, and they certainly have their place on the list as well, but you're planning for yourself. So remember that.
It's funny because I also think this is a personality type thing of like, some people are really attracted to the word goals, even in the fun stuff of like, oh, goals with my family this summer, whatever. But then some people are super repelled by the word goal. You know, if you have to make fun a to-do, then it's not fun, you know, just like what they teach you in marriage of like, marriage time shouldn't be scheduled. And you're like, okay, well, but the reality is, if you want it to get done, sometimes it has to be scheduled. All kinds of fun, if you know what I mean. And so I feel like when we're talking about this, but I also wonder if the people who pressed play on this episode are like, oh, yay, let's talk about time management. And then other people are like, I'm going to skip this one this week.
Which I totally, that's okay. But I hope some of those who would have skipped it are like, oh, so goal doesn't have to mean misery. Now, again, I'm pointing out my podcast co-host again, but she definitely feels very strongly that planning in fun, especially if you're in the season of young kids, is the way to have fun. Like, you're not going to find yourself spontaneously enjoying a spa day or having couples time unless you've thought about how the pieces are going to put together. She has 5 children. I have 3. Like, there has to be some intentionality, even if it's just figuring out your childcare and then planning a very spontaneous date weekend together. That still counts as planning and fun to me, or it could be a quote unquote goal. And it may not apply to everyone, because maybe you are in the phase of your life where you're retired and every day you just wake up and can decide what to do next. But I have a feeling that's like a smaller segment of the listening population today.
Oh, yeah. You have to schedule fun with families. And also, because this is just me being really candid, because my family's fun is not always like my perfect day. So my, and I'm just being honest, I love my family so much and I love to spend time with them and I love making what's fun to them come to life. So like for my kids' birthdays, this was last year in 2020 when we couldn't do a party, we couldn't do anything like that. What they wanted to do was to go whale watching. We felt like we could do whale watching like safely. We were on a boat outside. It was just our family and like the boat captain, whatever. This is not how I would have celebrated their birthdays. And not just because of COVID, but you know what I mean? Like, oh, we're going whale watching. It actually ended up being amazing. Truthfully, it ended up being amazing. But my whole point in even sharing this is that if your family's idea of fun for the summer, if they like want to go camping for a weekend because that's fun for them and that's family connectedness, and you're like, oh my word of mercy, you can schedule in your family's fun and then be like, and then the next week, I am going to take myself to a coffee shop all day and read my book or whatever, you know, like, I don't know why I feel compelled to say this. I'm feeling really compelled to even share this because I do think that when we're talking about scheduling in family fun, I don't want women to be hearing this as like, oh, great, another place I'm failing or another thing I have to do or whatever. I don't want anyone to hear it that way. What I'm saying is if you making family fun time happen and whatever, it doesn't have to be like at the absolute cost to you. Build in your own special fun time later in the week or whatever it needs to be. And you know, we can shy away from the word goal, but this is what this is.
Yes. And I think it also depends on your season of life and maybe your planning and goal setting or whatever word you want to use for it is going to be really, really minimal because you have like a newborn and a two-year-old. And I have been there and I fully get it. Maybe your only plan is to hire a babysitter for 2 hours so that you can leave the house. And that's like a huge victory. And that's been your plan, but you still have to plan that.
Like, right. Yeah. No,
so I'm it glad, doesn't I'm have to be a lot.
That. I'm glad you said that. That was good.
Going to be suddenly perfect with it because no, but also you're not going to be able to keep up with tracking your water, your steps, your nutrition, your sleep, your kids. I mean, you have to draw the line somewhere and you have to be having time to actually live. So there may be one or two things that you want to mindfully focus on tracking, or maybe zero things. That's totally okay too, but decide what they are and give yourself grace when you do not hit the mark every single day. Cause that's the whole point of a tracker. If you are already doing something perfectly, why would you even need to track it?
What do you think about things like, I mean, this is just you personally, like tracking your water intake, tracking how many times you meditated that week or went to yoga or did the Peloton or whatever. Like, is this, I mean, I know again, personality types, all of that, but like, do you find it helpful?
Sometimes and with some things. So I like to track more to identify patterns than to be reaching for some like, oh, I'm going to check off every single box. I think there was a time when I thought I could check off every single box, but I've definitely moved past that now. However, like, let's say you're having migraines, which sometimes I do. I find that tracking when I get less than 8 hours of sleep is helpful because then I can see like, oh, look, I got 3 migraines because I got really bad sleep for 2 weeks. So I think tracking can be useful when used strategically. One thing I really dislike personally, and this is totally personal preference, I'm not like saying it's good or bad, is streaks. Oh, like the idea that I'm going to do something every day perfectly for a year, 2 years, like whatever, I'm stressed out at the mere thought of that. So I'm going to give you permission right now that if you started a streak that is no longer serving you, you can quit now. I just giving you permission if that is you. Because I just think aiming for perfection in almost any area doesn't serve anyone. And so I think streaks can be a little bit dangerous in that way.
Yeah, that's like, well, I mean, we won't spin off all the way into like control issues and, you know, restricting yourself and like all these things that are rooted in perfectionist tendencies of like, if I'm just perfect, if I'm just good, then nothing bad will happen. you know, then I will be, you know, considered worthy, like all these things that we have that is, are why we are perfectionist. I don't track so much anymore. It did help me. We've both mentioned seasons when we had little kids, when I felt like my brain wasn't tip top, you know, cause I wasn't getting enough sleep. It was just a frazzled season of life. Those few years where I felt like it was actually helpful to me to track because I had such mom fog that I was like, I don't remember if I did that this week or not, you know, like things like that. It's also been helpful to me when it's something important to me that I want to get done. And I'm only going to get it done if I am having the satisfaction of checking it off or seeing a tracker or whatever. And this can be anything. This isn't necessarily habits. Like I don't respond very well to health habit tracking. Like that's not really like my thing, but when I was trying to read, now I have a very established morning reading habit, but it wasn't always that way. And so I was like, it's actually important to me that I read in the morning and that I read through some of these books that are important to me to read, but they always get shoved to the bottom of the pile. So if I do it in the morning, then that's a thing. That's like a value. That's like tracking a value, which this gets stickier because everyone is sort of different here. And I don't want to put like morality on our time management. I don't think that's healthy at all, but just in the sense of talking about tracking things that are important to me, I won't just do them naturally. Like I need a little accountability, be it in an app or on my like planner check or whatever.
No, I get that. So one of the planning tools that I have tried fairly recently is like the Cultivate What Matters Power Sheets. And they have a lot of tracking built in on these little monthly pages.
Yes.
But some of the things that I will put on there, number one, I've learned like not to expect a lot of check marks, but also stuff like you just mentioned, like I have like call a friend this week. Like that's not something I'm going to get angry at myself or beat myself up, but it might motivate me to be like, oh, I feel better when I do that. And it's on there. Like, let me call a friend. So.
Oh, that is perfect. That's a better example than mine. Also, I'm glad you brought up Power Sheets because I have used Power Sheets. Everyone, this is a Cultivate What Matters. They put these out yearly and I have done them now a couple of times. I hope nobody judges what I'm about to say. She has this section. They're like planners, you know, like a coiled binder.
They're super pretty.
Yeah. They're so pretty, which of course I'm like falling for, but you're supposed to take a time, like hopefully a whole day or a whole afternoon and really go through this thing at the beginning. There's this whole section in the beginning that really helps you decide what matters, helps you look at your whole year, what we were talking about earlier, and like figure out what you want to have done by the end of the year. And then back into that, into smaller goals, like make those into bite-sized goals, just this whole thing. And you're supposed to spend a lot of time at the beginning, like literally hours setting yourself up for a successful year. I have now twice, two different years, done that part. And then not done the rest of the year. Like I haven't followed it through even I had this beautiful pink binder or whatever, but it actually, I'm not even sad about it. The first year I was maybe sad because I was like, well, that was not a waste of money, but you know, I was like, well, that was like, why'd I do that? Except I knew exactly why I did it because it ended up being so helpful to me just to sit down with myself and have this like guided thing of figuring out what do I want out of this year? Because like I already said, I'm not good at big picture like this. And so the way that she breaks it down, Laura Casey, that's her name, right?
Laura Casey. Okay. Yes. Yes.
The way that she breaks it down, Laura Casey, who founded Cultivate What Matters, it was helpful to me. So I'm glad you brought that one up.
Yeah. I really like that system. And it's so pretty that it makes it fun. Like it definitely feels cozy filling out those papers in a way that I'm not sure it would if it was just a blank notebook. But you actually might notice the sections are really small for each month. There's very minimal stuff. And the main part is just to set your monthly goals out in what they call their attending list. I'm not affiliated with them, by the way.
Me neither.
No relationship. But I do think it can be a great product for someone that wants to dip their toe into the goal setting part of planners without necessarily like using a planner all the time.
Well, and I will say that one of the things that I require when I'm looking for a planner and Plum Paper, who I'm also not affiliated with and have tried to be affiliated with, like I've tagged them, or they care not that I love their planners. But anyway, one of my prerequisites, one of my requirements for any planner that I get is that there has to be you have to be able to look at the month and like have a goal setting thing at the beginning of each month. And I really like the way that Plum Paper's monthly thing. They have three big goals. You have three big goals for the month. They have sections for that. And then they have just sort of a full blank page for however you want to deal with that. But anyway, I really like the way that they do it also. So you don't necessarily have to buy a whole separate thing just for you to figure out your goals, although it's pretty and fun if you're inclined to that. But also a lot of these planners, a lot of planners will have like a smaller version of that too.
Yes. I could name like a million more and we will run out of time, but we'll do that later. Okay. So number six, and I know you're really good about that because you've talked about your family meetings, but just to remember that you're not planning in a vacuum, think about how and when to involve family members in your planning processes. So I try to do kind of like a weekly what's coming up planning session with my husband, and I'm getting the kids involved more and more. My kids are a little younger than yours, I think. I have a 4, 7, and a 9-year-old. So we're getting there where they're putting more of their own thoughts into what we're doing as a family. I actually am having, we have a new thing where when you're turning 10, you get to pick the family spring break vacation. So that's kind of a way of getting the family to have a say in what's going on. And my husband and I have recently tried to take these longer, like a 2-night couples getaway where we spend part of the time planning, which might sound really, really unromantic. I promise that's not like all we're doing. But can be really helpful to just make sure we're on the same page about like what we want for the next few months or the next year. So it can be, you may think of new things by planning with somebody else. And if you are part of a family, you want to make sure that everyone's included as you're kind of building a group vision.
Okay. I also want to offer the perspective that if your partner is not so much a planner, solidarity sister, because I do not sit down and have planning meetings with Jeff. Jeff is not a planner. He's not. And I don't know how else to say this other than he is surrounded by other people who plan and tell him what to do and tell him where to be and what he needs to bring and whatever. Like, he has a lot of people in his life, including his wife, but including people that he employs who plan for him and tell him whatever. And so that has made him, and I'm not saying that any kind of disparaging way, because he's very talented at what he does, but the planning is not one of those things. Like, he has hired that part. He's outsourced that part.
Maybe you should do a family meeting with his, like, I don't know, one of his employees.
Sarah, now how do you know I have not done that?
Actually, my husband's a surgeon, and sometimes when the call schedule is taking too long, I like take matters into my own hands. I'm like, email the practice manager. Hey, can I get the date? So I hear you.
Oh yeah. No, I'm much more in communication with Jeff's assistant on a regular basis. But anyway, there is no weekend romantic planning in my marriage. If anyone else just wants to know that. Okay, go on.
Okay. So that was number six. Number seven, and I think you agree with this one, you have to make it enjoyable to you. So planning, the act of planning, can be a multi-sensory experience. I had Gretchen Rubin on my podcast, and she actually helped me realize that, like, there are different senses to planning. There's the feel of the paper. There's the feel of your pen on the paper. Maybe like the smell of different inks and stuff or old paper. And it really can be something that you enjoy. I'm not saying you have to. You can also be like, that sounds super boring and I want to go skydiving instead, or whatever you enjoy. But there are some really wonderful tactile tools out there that can make the whole experience fun and might encourage you to stick with some of these rituals if there's something you want to do.
Oh, I'll link to that episode with Gretchen. I saw that she was on your show, and I don't think about that so much in terms of planning, although a little bit, because I do my Sunday ritual around it. They're sort of similar, but everything you just described that she said about all of your senses are involved, I feel that way about journaling, and what type of pen I'm using matters, what type of journal, like the paper in my journal matters, kind of like my, I don't want to say like my posture, like if I'm in bed versus if I'm sitting at a desk, if I'm on a couch, whatever, like the whole experience of journaling. It doesn't have to, if I'm just jotting something quickly down, but if I'm really trying to like have a heart-centered moment, then those things do matter. And I can absolutely see you bringing that to journaling. And some people use, one of the things that I talk about when I talk about journaling is that you can use your planner. That is a type of journaling. That can be a type of memory keeping or documenting. You know, it's all about kind of your mindset or your perspective on it. And if you're never going to be a big journaler, or like you're never going to maybe be like a scrapbooker or make photo albums or anything like that, you can put elements of that, the things that you want to remember, little memories and everything, in a planner.
You totally could. And there's certain planners that certainly lend themselves to that. I don't do a lot of journaling. I used to do more of it, but I do have a 5-year journal that I use where, you know, you have like, it's from 2021, which is, you know, I'm almost done with that year, but to 2025. And so you can see year over year. And I totally use that as like an artistic, fun kind of meditative experience. And it super matters to me which pens I'm using in there and finding cute stickers or printing out photo stickers of my kids to put in there. So yeah, planning and journaling definitely can be hybrid.
Is that one of those that just is like one sentence a day or something? It's like a short term, like less daunting of a journal?
It's not one sentence. So the one that I have is by Hobonichi, which is a Japanese planner and paper company. And it has space. It doesn't have space for tons. Like, you know, it's like 10 lines or so for each of the years. And then there is a blank page on the right, which I usually just like put a sticker on or just leave blank. I don't really use it, too much pressure. But I do like that it's not that much that you have to do for each day. Because if I had to do a whole page to memory keeper plan for each day, I probably wouldn't keep up with it. Although one could also use their regular old planner as kind of a memory keeping tool as well by just adding in those sorts of things. But mm-hmm. I tend to keep them separate and I ditch my planners and throw them out after I'm done with them. That's maybe sacrilege, but yes.
Oh no, I'm glad you said that. Do I keep mine? I do keep my planners, but I don't know why. I don't use them as memory keeping. I rarely go back and look. I can only think of like one occasion when I really needed to know when something happened that I went back to look.
To be fair,
I don't know
why
I keep them.
I keep like highlight years, like new baby years or like new job years, but I just don't want to keep all of them because there's something to me sort of weird and morbid about the idea that I could see my entire life like in one box. So I just don't keep, probably keep one out of three.
I mean, it can be like, even though I do keep mine, by the way, I'm telling you, I keep them. But also I'm like, it's almost like, you know, those people who like keep their taxes for like 20 years, they have like a file folder of like all their taxes. And then at one hand, you're like, isn't that sort of depressing?
Totally.
You're just looking at your taxes. I don't know, like just ditch those. Sometimes I feel that way a little bit about, not that I feel like my life is depressing or anything, but just like old to-do lists. Like, I don't know.
It would be fun to look at like key dates in your life and go back and be like, oh, that was the day. I don't know. Something fun. Yeah. I guess if you have all of it, you could do that.
The sun is shining and warm weather is here, in my part of the world at least. And while, of course, we love pool parties and backyard barbecues and spending time outdoors with friends and family, that also means more sweating and body odor. Lumi is here to save your smelly day. Lumi is the first of its kind in full body deodorant. It is clinically proven to block odor all day and control odor for up to 72 hours. Its secret is mandelic acid, which stops odor before it even starts. I've said it before, but it really is more of a pre-odorant, if you will. I especially love that Lumi deodorant is baking soda and paraben free. It is also pH balanced for safe use on all areas of your body. You can choose from a variety of fresh scents like clean tangerine, lavender sage, and toasted coconut. Lumi's starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, 2 free products of your choice like a mini body wash or deodorant wipes, and free shipping. As a special offer for listeners, new customers get $5 off a Lumi starter pack with code U at LumiDeodorant.com. That equates to 40% off your starter pack when you visit Lumi, L-U-M-E, deodorant, deodorant.com and use code U, Y-O-U. For everyday wear. And the Michelle ring has a gorgeous green stone. It would be so pretty at a holiday party this year. Basically, every single item would make a great gift too, and they have several gift guide options on their website. Like I said, their pieces are at incredible price points. You can save even more right now with my special link, 20% off. New collections are also released every Friday, so there's always something new to check out. Go to shop.analuisa.com/you to start shopping now. That's shop, S-H-O-P, Ana, A-N-A, Luisa, L-U-I-S-A.com/you, Y-O-U, for 20% off your first order.
Okay, that was another digression. I will get to number eight, which is just because most of your life is digital doesn't mean you won't benefit from trying something on paper. So this is my big caveat, because some people might have skipped this episode because they're like, nope, I got Google Calendar, I got Todoist, I got Trello, whatever, I'm good, like leave me alone. But I mean, I certainly use a lot of digital tools as well, and I still feel like I get something out of like putting either my day or my week onto paper. I do both, but I could live with doing only one of those if you don't want to keep up with so much planning, because there's just something about having to cull all the electronic things together into like what you actually want your day to look like and the physicality of doing that. I also feel that it can help prevent you from putting 90 things on your list, which the electronic apps, if you keep migrating stuff forward, you will eventually end up with a list that is completely untenable, and then it will hurt your heart to cross them out. But you probably wouldn't turn to a daily page and put 90 things on your to-do list. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to think of paper planning as a complement, because nobody lives in a digital vacuum. But it doesn't mean it's not still potentially beneficial to try.
I definitely use both. I mean, I have a planner, as I've described 100 times this episode, but I use a lot of those tools that you mentioned. I use Evernote. I mean, my whole life is like dedicated to Evernote. I mean, in some ways, that's like the most important planning app I use. I have so much stuff in Evernote. I really like love it. I use Trello, as I mentioned. I use tasks and events in Google Calendar. Those are kind of my main ones that I can think of that I use for planning purposes. But like, you don't have to be all or the other. You don't have to be like a paper purist,
totally,
or like digital only. Like, it's fine to use both in whatever, however your brain works. I do think there is something to the brain science that I think Laura Vanderkemp talks about and Gretchen Rubin talks about, of writing something down does something different in our brain, of like solidifying it. You will remember it more or something.
Yes. Yeah, so and like actual science looking at that, like taking notes by hand versus a computer. And if you give somebody a test, they're more likely, because we can't type as we can write usually slower than we type. And so our brain is forced to filter and process, which is kind of the equivalent of not putting 90 things on your list. You're going to be forced to choose what's actually important.
Yes. So I totally believe that. That's why I use both, but I even thought about when we were starting out this episode, should we talk about digital versus paper at the very beginning? And I was like, no, because I think it's like a false dichotomy. You know what
yes.
I mean? Like, no, just be both.
It's not a choice. It's and. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Number nine. So I've touched on this one a bit previously, as I mentioned the time with my husband, but consider a full or half day planning retreat once in a while. I don't think it's realistic to do this every month, or really for most people, including myself, every quintile, but we all probably have a day or a half day we could put aside perhaps every year to just sit down with all the stuff, our calendars, our notebooks, our brains, and just think and make some of these lists and kind of collect loose ends and think about how we want the future to look. If we do not put that date on the calendar and actually mark it off, there's no way it will happen. And I say this as somebody who loves to plan and loves the idea of doing this, but have found that if I just like assume there'll be some magic day in December where my kids are at school and I don't have any work, like there's no chance. So if you are considering doing this, I highly suggest you truly block out the time on your calendar for this retreat. You don't necessarily have to get away if you're going to be in an empty house, but you could consider it like maybe an overnight type of a thing, or even just a coffee shop or an outdoor area in these COVID times that you love, where you could spread out your stuff. You're in California, I'm in Florida. I just recognize that advice is probably not going to work for our New Englanders, but you get what I'm saying. A special place to sit down and really think about what you want for the coming year. And this is the perfect time to make sure you schedule it in. It also could be in January. So there's no hard deadline on this, even though I personally love to have things kind of figured out before the new year. You're not going to get in trouble if you have this little retreat on January, whatever, but something to consider doing.
And I like compartmentalizing it too. Like, I like your example of going away with your husband. And I'm assuming that a lot of what you're talking about is what you want your family life to look like for the year, or maybe, you know, home renovation, or, you know, whatever, like things like that. But I also think you could do this as a work retreat. Like, I have my business mastermind that I've talked about before. And we don't do exactly this, but we absolutely could when we go away for our weekends together that are work weekends where we're trying to get work done and do some things. We absolutely could set aside time to like, for it to be planning, like from a business standpoint of like, here's what I want, you know, this next quarter to look like, here's what I want next year to look like, here's my stretch goals, like all of those things. So I kind of like you that you can compartmentalize like that. You don't have to go away and like plan your whole life. Who is it that does, is it Bill Gates that does a Think Week?
I think I have heard something like that. It might be Bill Gates, where he just disappears for a week, like off the face of the earth.
I don't think it was Steve Jobs. I think it was Bill Gates. And he has an annual, and he calls it Think Week, which I wanted to do this myself, where he just goes away. Like he completely disconnects. He reads books. But it's not like a rest. It's like a work week almost. It's called Think Week. And he's only allowed to think, I guess. I mean, read, I don't know. Reflect. Obviously he's reading and like planning, whatever, but it's not rest. It's not what it's like. I need some time to completely not have anything else on the calendar, you know, no to-dos, no phone calls, no meetings, whatever. And just sort of think about what I want my next steps to be or my business to be or whatever. And this that appeals to me so much. A Think Week. I mean, I wish. Cal Newport also talks a little bit about, I feel like we're naming like all people. He also talks a little bit about not Think Weeks, but like doing his deep work stuff and those concepts, which he's written a whole book about and talks about that I think is so interesting. But it's also this idea of going away and thinking and planning and instead of just like to-do list, just like the frazzle of like, oh, we have all these, we can plan digitally and we can plan on the paper and like all this, like, I don't want this conversation or anyone to come away from this thinking of like all the different ways that they can just be busier. Like that's not the goal. That's not what we're talking about here. I mean, I hope that we're helping people think about their time, but it doesn't mean like, we're not trying to help you do more.
No, very good distinction. I like that. I want to do a Think Week now.
Yeah, I didn't, me too.
All right. So number 10, our final thing here is it's okay to change your system. So consider everything that you try kind of an experiment. I don't think it's a fail if you have to go through a few planners in a calendar year. I have done it myself. Sometimes there's just a good planner for you at one time and a better planner for you at another time. 2020, I absolutely had to switch planners because obviously everything changed. And also I had all these dates in there that I didn't want to have to cross off. It was too depressing. And so I happily switched. And then I happily switched again when life got different. And I don't consider that a planner fail. I just consider that like the price of doing business. And yes, planners can add up. I get that. Like buying physical products can add up. But compared to some other things that we spend money on and use up, like I just kind of splurged on the Sephora sale. Planners are not so bad.
Okay, so, same on the Sephora sale. Tell me while we're here, tell me some of your favorite planners. And realizing that, you know, everyone, different planners are really doing kind of different things, to be honest. But I just want to hear what some of your favorite planners are.
Sure. So in the past year, I have happily used the Erin Condren Life Planner. I think that's a wonderful weekly/monthly planner. It has a lot of different spreads. I love the paper. That is a tactile experience. I am obsessed with that paper. I am currently using that actually, along with a full focus planner, which has a page for every day and then a notes page. So I find that helpful for work and just setting up my day. That is by a medium-sized or smaller company called Michael Hyatt and Company. It has a lot of incorporated goal setting and devotion to kind of intentional living. I love Hobonichi products. So in the past years, and I'm going to go back to it in 2022, I've used the Hobonichi Techo Cousin, which again has daily, weekly, and monthly pages. I love that. If the Japanese language part turns you off, because there are Japanese characters, to me, I just don't notice them. I don't speak Japanese, unfortunately, but there's one called the Wonderland 222. Which is a small US company based in Colorado that has a lot of parallels to the Hobonichi. The only difference is if you want a page for each day, you have to buy a separate book with the daily pages, but it's a beautiful product, fairly newer, small company. And I guess I will share that if you want a million planner reviews, yes, you can check my podcast, but also Amanda's Favorites is like the only YouTube channel I subscribe to. It's like my one channel. Actually, I think I subscribe also to JetPens, which is a company that specializes in different Asian stationery products, especially. So it's those two. But if you want someone to like do an actual flip through because you don't want to order 10 things and feel them, she will actually give you really detailed, in-depth descriptions as to what's in each planner, what the paper feels like, how it takes certain pens. So I'm just, since I named a few brands, but there's about 9,000 more, she's definitely a resource to check out. She's done like top five videos for 2022, hourly planners, daily, etc. So definitely a great place to go if you're just starting to get shopping and want to see what's out there. I think Plum paper is also an excellent choice. I find the paper a little smooth. I am left-handed and very sensitive to smudge-prone paper. So I cannot do it, but I love their layouts and the flexibility there. It is a great planner.
I love Plum paper because it's the right size for me. It's the right quality, which there's quality varies immensely. It's not the highest quality that I've used, but it is solid. You know, it's like good enough, definitely passes muster. And it's customizable. So you can make little sections. Like I'm, as a podcaster, frequently have lists of things I need to listen to, like for to prep for shows, shows I want to check out, anything like that. And I can customize a little list on my weekly planner for shows to listen to, you know, like you can label it that way. So there's a lot of custom options with Plum paper. It's also a really good price point. It's about $30 with your customizations. And that is, you know, half of what some of these others are that we're talking about. I've always been curious about Erin Condren and probably will try hers eventually. I need her to make one that's a little less cute.
Okay. You should look at her focused collection. I fully get it. One of my best friends is a total planner nerd as well, and she cannot handle the inspirational quotes inside, but they actually have a separate collection called the Focused, which uses, not to be confused with Full Focus, but this is by Erin Condren, which uses the same paper, which is just amazing, like toothy mohawk paper, but much more businesslike inside, much more minimalist, but still with kind of the same layouts. So you may want to take a look at that because
okay, I will go look at
check your boxes.
I have another one that I just want to mention because I actually really love this company. I have an undated daily from Inkwell Press. And what's wonderful about it to me is because it's undated and it's a daily one. So it has like daily to-dos, daily schedule, whatever. And it's really good sized. I only use it. I've had it now for several years and I actually don't think they make this exact product anymore, but I'll link to one that I think they make that's kind of similar, but I know they don't make this exact one anymore. It's been like 3 years. 3 years. I still haven't worked my way through it because I only need a big daily page like that when I have a lot going on. And so that's just, you know, a few times in the year I'll have like a lot happening. And so I'll be like, I need a daily template, you know, instead of just like a notebook or something. And it's very nice, like a very nice cover, very nice paper. And I'm throwing that out there, even if we can't find this exact one at Inkwell Press, but just to think about to buy some undated things sometimes for this exact reason, like that you can just use as needed and not feel like, oh crap, I wasted $50 on this thing that I can't really use for whatever reason. You can, with undated, you can do anything you want.
Yes. And if I love Inkwell Press, I love the look of their stuff. I think they're only selling disc bound planners now, but they may have some planner pads that would be similar to the daily layout you're talking about.
Oh,
yeah. She got rid of all of her bound and coiled stuff and everyone's like, bring them back. But their stuff is lovely and it has great goal setting incorporated if you buy certain inserts. But I also wanted to mention Ink and Volt because you just made me think about it in terms of like a daily thing that you might need once in a while. They have the most luxurious tear-off planner options, not really planner options, but they're more like printed pads with like daily layouts or weekly layouts. And there are a number of products like this, but theirs is like beautiful paper and like really well thought out layouts. And it's another small women-owned company. So Inkwell Press is wonderful as well, but Ink and Volt if you want to look for like tear-off pads.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. Oh, and then one more I'm going to mention. It doesn't work for me because it's not quite the right size. It's a little bit too small for me, but I love the design of it. I know a lot of people use it, is the Get to Work book. I don't know if you've tried that one or not. And I do have friends that use it. Doesn't, like I said, it doesn't fit my hand right. This is, now we're like getting into the nitty gritty. Of like,
some people were waiting for it though.
No, I know. Like I can't write in it right. Like it just doesn't lay the way I need it to, and my hand doesn't do the right thing. And I don't know, whatever. I'm like, I can't do this. My handwriting's too big. I'm not sure what's happening. But anyway, it's not quite the right size for me, but I do really like the design. And I know design matters to a lot of people for Get to Workbook also. So is there anyone else we need to pull? Anyone else?
There's 9 million more.
There's so many.
I love Get to Workbook. And I actually had the creator Elise on Best Laid Plans, and she was just lovely. And I agree. Yeah. Design aesthetic. Like, she is a designer and an artist, and that comes through in her work. I also love that she actually includes, so there's like discussion of how inclusive the planner is, right? Because if planners include one religious holiday and then they ignore another tradition. So her solution is to have no holidays. And I kind of love that. Like, you put in your own holidays. You can put in whatever ones you want. You can use stickers, however, but I just think that's kind of like the ultimate inclusive planner. Just put the days.
Totally. I do love that. I ended up buying from Elise, Get to Workbook, that company. I ended up buying from her some stickers, some postcards. Like, there's just some really great things. If you are into this kind of world and like, this is what you like, she does. She's the best design out there probably.
Yes.
Okay. This was so fun. I feel like we talked about a lot of different things. A lot of different things. I mean, we talked about books, podcasts, planners, the way we think about time, the way, I mean, we talked about so many things, but I absolutely love this conversation. Thank you for coming and sharing all of your expertise with the 10 Things to Tell You listeners. Where can they find you? Because now they're going to want to go look at all the stuff that you've shared.
Yeah. So thank you. First of all, thank you so much for having me on. It is a pleasure. I am a devoted 10 Things listener. Mm-hmm. So just so exciting. You can find me at my million year running blog, theshoebox.com. My initials are SHU, by the way. That's where that came from. theshubox.com. And my two podcasts, the one I do with Laura Vanderkam. So we're co-hosts in Best of Both Worlds. That's on all the podcast platforms. And then Best Laid Plans is my own. That's all about things planning. I do have Instagram. It's @shoebox_plans. I don't post there much. I'm planning to post there less and less as time goes on. But you can find links to everything there as well.
Okay. And of course, everyone, as always, I will have all of this, everything we talked about today, I will link to everything in the show notes, which you can always find at 10thingstotellyou.com/podcast. And then on social media, because I am still on Instagram all the time, I will tag Sarah and everything so everyone can go find all the things that we have talked about. But this was really fun. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Laura Tremaine, and you've just listened to the 10 Things to Tell You podcast. You can find the show notes and subscribe to episode emails at 10thingstotellyou.com/podcast. And you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at 10 Things to Tell You. Remember, this is an interactive podcast. I have 10 things to tell you, and you have 10 things to tell. So take this topic to your journal or a friend, or post on social media using the hashtag 10 Things to Tell You. These episodes are meant to bring connection with others and ourselves and spark better conversations. Thanks for listening. Now go share something.